Welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. I'm today's host, Owen Woods, filling in for Marty Jones. Today, I'm joined on the south side of Alamosa by the City of Alamosa's Outdoor Recreation Supervisor and Grants Coordinator, Shauna Lease. Welcome, Shauna. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thank you.
The last time we had you in the studio, you were here talking about your role with outdoor activities and programming at the Boys and Girls Club. But now you're the city's Outdoor Rec Supervisor. Tell us a little bit about your journey through careers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was lucky enough to be the Outdoor Adventure Director for Boys and Girls Club for over 2 years. It was an absolutely wonderful position. I got to know a lot of the kids across the whole valley, which was really exciting. And that position was really dynamic. What I figured out after a while was that it's not just about inspiring kids to get outside during the week, it's also the weekends, and that includes parents. And so once the Outdoor Recreation Supervisor position opened for the city, I really wanted to do that. I think that as a community, we should all be going outside together, and it's really just not the kids. And so inspiring the parents to take them outside as well is something that truly is a mission that I want to accomplish.
What are you finding are major differences in these two jobs?
Oh, man. Just the scope of programming. I mean, like, we span all the way from 3-year-olds to adults. And I mean, going from serving just 6-year-olds to 18-year-olds, that's just one subset. But then expanding your programming that vastly has been a challenge, but it's been really exciting because we get to do things where parents get to be involved with their kids, which I think is even more exciting. So youth fishing days, we have parents out there with their kiddos and they're both learning how to, you know, tie a line. And I think that that's wonderful. We have a rock climbing starting this month and, you know, we've got 3 to 6-year-olds on the wall with their parents. And I think that's important. And so just, it's exciting to have that amount of programming.
I think it's exciting that you're now finding opportunities to reintroduce adults into the outdoors. I think that, you know, that's something that we kind of overlook. It's like, yeah, the kids need an opportunity, but what about the people who have never really done that their entire adult lives? I think it's a really big deal and really important also, like, maybe to see their kids out, and it's like kind of inspires a little bit of that youth too in them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the things like we kind of deal with, especially in this community, is, you know, depression and mental health can be a really big issue. And we know that just being outside inherently makes you happy. I mean, it resets your circadian rhythm. It makes us all, you know, sleep better and feel better. And so getting the parents outside with their kids is really important. It's really a family thing. Families should be outside, not just kids.
No, and I think Alamosa really lends itself to like family friendly outdoor activity. You don't really climb an elevation. You're kind of pretty much flat the whole way. There's parks, there's green space. What makes Alamosa unique in its outdoor recreation accessibility?
I mean, you kind of just spoke to that. I mean, we don't really have a whole lot of hills here in Alamosa, which is actually a good thing. It makes accessibility across the whole city pretty easy. I think especially for trails, like for elder users, I mean, like the trails aren't, you know, very bumpy or like there's not a whole lot of hills or a whole lot of incline to go up. And so it really does make the outdoors equitable for everybody at that point, because it doesn't matter, you know, your ability or your physical needs. You can just be on flat ground the whole time. And that's exciting. I think also just like if you go outside, you see we have so many old trees, like we have so many old cottonwoods and things that have just been here forever. And I think that that's something to also look for. Like you go to the city in Denver, you see all these like tiny saplings and new trees everywhere and these new homes. And it's just, you know, it's so depressing. You go to Alamosa and you see these old elder trees that have been watching, you know, the community for so long and growing with us. And I think that that's also important when it comes to our parks, is keeping things that have been established for a long time here as well.
Yeah, I mean, I go into Carroll's Woods and over the Riparian Park, and when I was a kid, I used to play there in the same trees that were there, you know, 15, 20 years ago when I was a kid are still there. I think you make a really interesting point there that there's a longevity here that you don't really find elsewhere. There's like the preservation of the outdoors that is like kind of solely unique. It's very cool.
Absolutely. I think also like if you've ever been to the wilderness area that's like just south of the state, that's just so beautiful and it just grows so wild, and that's why it's called the wilderness, and that's probably one of my favorite secret spots in town, if you will.
Yeah, there's some good secret spots around town, aren't there? Yeah. Are you finding kind of overlap with your Boys and Girls Club kids at all through some of the stuff you're doing?
Yeah, that was kind of the nice thing about transitioning to the city. The city in partnership as being part of the Generation Wild Coalition works with the Alamosa School District and Boys and Girls Club for Friday programming. And so I get to see the same kids that I was seeing, you know, Monday through Friday with Boys and Girls Club on Fridays during the school year. And so that's important too, because, you know, there's a name and a face there with those kiddos. And so it's nice to have that sense of belonging where they come like, oh, it's Miss Shauna and we're doing paddleboarding. Like, yeah, we've been doing paddleboarding for years, guys. I'm the same person. Don't worry about
just
it.
Just different cap.
Exactly.
Different cap.
Yeah. I just switched hats. And so that's wonderful. I think that also gives me a different perspective. I have a perspective from the kids' side. And I think that that's really important is, you know, if they go to Riparian Park, what is it that they're looking at versus, you know, what the adults or what like just people in the community are looking at. And so having taking them out there for years, it's really nice to be able to actually put the suggestions that they've given me, you know, to fruition, if you will.
What are some of the things that kids are noticing that you're finding very unique?
So like Riparian Park, for example, there's this really cool like teepee area where there's like, you know, we call Bigfoot's house and the kids absolutely love it. And it's nice to have something just like that's out there where they can go and they can be like, okay, I can go hide in here for about 5 minutes and have a good time. So just random things like that. I think also just in terms of getting lost, like kids get lost pretty easily. And so one of the things that I've been striving for since, you know, I started was, you know, making sure we put some better confidence markers on the trail. I think that, you know, orienteering or learning compasses or just like learning good trail behavior is nice. But if you've got a kiddo on the trail and they're trying to take their parent out and they don't know which direction to go because there's no confidence marker, that's kind of not going to make them feel very good either. So if we're trying to inspire people to get out, they should know where they're going, especially the kiddos. So noticing that kids were getting lost at leading us on the trail, I thought it was important for us to put some confidence markers out.
No, that's going to be a really cool little experience for the kids to kind of walk their parents through and kind of, you know, teach them a little bit. I think that's really important for the youth to continue to teach our older generations, our parents, our grandparents. Yeah, it seems like Alamosa kind of lends itself to just like really, you know, like molding the youth to be really good outdoor stewards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really what we want. I mean, kids are really compassionate and they try to conserve what they care about. And so inspiring that compassion for the outdoors has been a really big mission of mine. But then, you know, also inspiring them to inspire their parents too is even bigger.
And I want to kind of talk about, you know, we did touch on the importance of going outdoors, but what is the importance of a municipality, a local government, to have an outdoor recreations division that really focuses its time on that aspect of a community?
I think first and foremost, safety. You know, we can talk about, you know, going out and riding bikes so you want. You know, we've got really wonderful trail system, but I think that QCing those trails is important. Like I go out and then me and my, you know, we go out and we ride the trails consistently, you know, at least once every 2 weeks. And the reason why is because, you know, we don't know if somebody's going to, you know, if you're going too fast on your bike and you hit a sandy point and then you end up, you know, bailing out, that's not fun for anybody. And so we need to know where those places are. I think like just as, you know, we've gotten, you know, older, I think a lot of the time, like as a society, we've realized that being outside is really important, especially after COVID. Like it just, for mental health, it is probably one of the most important things you can do in life is go outside and get some fresh air. So I think for a city to have a healthy city and have a vibrant community, having your community actually be outside and be happy and healthy is important. I think having spaces that are safe and clean and accessible for them is just as important. You can go walk outside and be amongst a bunch of buildings. And I mean, that's just fine. But I think that, you know, studies have shown that being around green spaces and green areas actually make you happier and make you healthier. And so having those places and supplying those is really what the city is meant for.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember, I want to say it was Charles Dickens maybe, but somebody, I read a quote the other day that said, you should never trust a thought that's born inside. Always trust the thought that happens on a walk. And I find it's like this clear-headedness that I'm like, okay, I'm frustrated today. I need to go outside for a walk and, you know, 2 miles on the river. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, it's good to be back.
I think it's also just 10 minutes of walking releases endorphins, and that just inherently makes you happier. And so why not walk outside?
Well, and a lot of research that's coming out of these blue zones, especially in Japan, is they find that so many people walk, not just for mindfulness, but for deliberate mindfulness. And I think that's really important for a community to like really focus on, okay, like walking is easy. You know, if you're not totally disabled, if you're there, if you have your faculties, walking is as accessible to the outdoors and to exercise as it gets. Where do you see the future of Alamosa's recreation when it comes to just the walking accessibility? Put everything else aside, but like where's the future of walking in this city?
One of the things that I find really awesome, like I'm not a big fan of the Denver metro area, that's where I'm from, but one of the things that they do there that's pretty cool is flat 14ers. And I think that that's something, not necessarily the flat 14ers component, but just the thought process behind it. Having our trails and our sidewalks be interconnected so you can go from one side of the city to the other and not have to, you know, walk on a dirt road or walk into the road itself or on the side of the street. I think just making all of Alamosa accessible and having the trails actually meet where the sidewalk, you know, would be is kind of important there. That would be something that's kind of, you know, important just accessibility wise, is being able to have all of the trails and all of the sidewalks interconnected. I think personally for me, I would like to see, like, you know, State Ave Bridge. Like, yeah. I mean, I see, you know, people going across that on a wheelchair, you know, at least every other day, there's a person that does that and they're not on the sidewalk because they can't get that on the sidewalk itself on that bridge. And just that bridge itself, I don't necessarily know is the most pedestrian or bike friendly.
Yeah.
So personally for me, that would be big dream goals, would be to make that bridge more accessible. But I think just having our trails and our sidewalks connect to where you can go anywhere in town would be just perfect.
Yeah. Seamlessness is, I think we're closer to seamlessness than we are like a total walkable friendly city, you know? And I have grand dreams for what a walkable, you know, accessible city looks like. But I think if we could just like, start to meld those barriers and create seams that are easier for people to get over. Cause you're right. They're especially like during Rio Trio, a lot of people are like on that bridge and it's kind of a blind bridge. It's a little scary sometimes, but it's also, it connects the north side to the south side of the river. And that's really important that people are able to access that, because when you get past the golf course, it's way quieter. You know, you get to the Oxbow Loops, you get to the riparian park, it's totally different. But if you're not able to ever really see that because of infrastructure, what does that say about a community?
Yeah. There's a way that you can access, you know, from what, you know, it's called the Maddox Loop and then the Pelican Trail there, but not very many people are aware that you have to go onto the other side of riparian park to just get to that part of the city. They just take State Ave Bridge. And so I don't know. And like I said, personally, that would be my main pressure point.
That's a pretty good one.
Redoing that one.
You know, famously, the outdoor recreation supervisor is in charge of the Alamosa's premier triathlons, the Rio Frio and the Rio Trio. How are you finding the prep work for that now that you've taken over?
So we just got started on planning for Rio Frio. We know that's going to be January 24th. So that's super exciting to have a date. You know, with Rio Trio as well, we have the Family Fest that, you know, was its first ever outdoor family festival last year that came in conjunction with Rio Trio. And so I'm really excited to have that come out this year again as well. We're partnering, you know, with Adams State University to have that festival again. And I think that that's really important. When we talk about outdoor equity, I think talking about the equitable pieces of the outdoors is key. And so having a festival where families can come and conjunction with Rio Trio and learn about the equitable pieces that we have in the valley for them. I'm not sure that most people know that we have a shared gear library with the Gin Wild Coalition. Yep. And I think that having places like Rio Trio to tell the community about that shared gear library is important. So just so, like, you know, listeners can know, the Generation Wild Coalition, we have a shared gear library where you can go check out equipment, you know, at a low cost. So that way you can go access the outdoors by yourselves. I mean, if you want to borrow a bike and go to the shared gear library and get a bike. If you want to take your family camping, they have sleeping bags, they have tents, they have, you know, camp stoves. And so really as a Gin Wild Coalition, you know, we've been really striving to make the outdoors as equitable and as easy, you know, easy to access as possible. And so the Family Fest in conjunction with Rio Trio is probably my most exciting thing to do this year, just because we get to talk about that equity piece.
Yeah, I'm really glad we have people like you and Will Rickards who are putting their heads together to really increase the awareness of the outdoors that we have in the valley. And I'm really excited. I'm hoping that this outdoor family festival can really continue, because I think it's really important. I think it's an important aspect of the whole Rio Trio weekend, but also just what a perfect opportunity to like really teach everybody who didn't know we had these assets here. I think it's really important to kind of like, you know, spread those out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just the shared gear library either. You know, it's also, you know, putting a name to a face. There's a lot of coalition partners. There's 12 of us entities actually involved in the coalition, and we're spread across the whole valley. And so actually getting to see the program partners and say, hey, you know, we offer programming and paddleboarding, or, you know, we're just to be able to see what program offerings are out there, I think is also important, because if you're not confident in camping, you're not going to take your kids camping.
Big time.
But if you know who to go to learn how to camp, and you know, that's an important piece.
Yeah, and I think it's really the gear library is really cool, because it's not just gear. Like, it's really specific, high quality, good outdoor gear that is name brand. But I think that, you know, I worked at Christie Mountain Sports when I was on the search and rescue team, and I think that you know, with the way we are, there are certain brands when it comes to the outdoors that I think are really truly reliable, and giving people affordable access to that gear that's often kind of expensive is a really eye-opening for the kinds of necessary gear, or the kinds of gear that is will make you more comfortable rather than not when you're outdoors. Because being uncomfortable in the outdoors will ruin the experience forever for you. One bad cold night and you'll never want to go camping again.
So true.
How are you finding you know, kids adjusting to these trips? I know you took some kids up to the 14ers when you were with the Boys and Girls Club. How do first-time kids kind of grasp onto the outdoors?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was part of our HOLLER program, which is High School Outdoor Leadership and Recreation. And that's it's a collaboration between Boys and Girls Club, Adams State University, and actually the city of Alamosa. Honestly, we call it type 2 fun. I think a lot of people in the outdoors know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, it's brutal going up a mountain. It's not easy work. But when you get to the top and you see that wonderful view, that's really what matters there. I think that one of the things that we strive for really hard with HOLLER is to make sure that they learned ahead of time what it was that they were going to need to get there. And so we, you know, from day one, they're learning how to pack a proper pack, what gear that you're actually going to need. You know, cotton is not going to be your best friend out here. Yep. And so they learn pretty early on, even before we take them out on a, you know, their first hike, what it is that they should be wearing and what gear they should be bringing, you know, and there's a lot of prep work that goes on there. I think what we kind of found was, honestly, we took some middle schoolers up last year, which was surprising to me. We, you know, we're a high school team, but we wanted to see if the high schoolers could inspire the middle schoolers. And they absolutely did. The middle schoolers did a lot better at gear than the high schoolers did. A specific example would be, we gave a high schooler a pair of, you know, hiking boots to wear up the mountain. And we didn't notice, but he didn't actually end up putting them on. He was just wearing his regular tennies. And about halfway up, he ended up going down with the group that decided not to summit. And that was okay. But the rest of the middle schoolers made it up because they decided to wear the proper gear. And I think that just, you know, speaks to that. That was a good lesson for that high schooler, because then when we went up, you know, Mount Columbia the following week, which was a 14er, he definitely wore the right shoes. But I think they adjust pretty well, just because we teach them ahead of time. Like, I think that it's just really important to prepare kiddos, you know, just to know better. We have had some kids come on, you know, some winter hikes and some sweatpants and regretted it within 20 minutes. And then luckily we supplied them with some proper snow pants afterwards. But we find if we talk to the kiddos ahead of time and we just give them the proper tools, they'll know how to use them.
No, I think, you know, the principles of like know before you go are a big deal. Just putting weather aside, just understanding what the trail is like, the kind of elevation you're going to be dealing with. Are you going to be in scree? Are you going to, did it rain yesterday? Am I going to be walking up mud? You know, I mean, those kinds of things are important. I think that when you instill them in a young age, it kind of notches their level of comprehension of like, oh, the outdoors are something to take seriously, but also ripe for fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely don't let kids hike in Crocs.
Your experience with, you know, this backcountry, the Sangres, the San Juans, led you to joining the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue Team. How long have you been on the team now?
Oh, I've only been on the team for a little bit over a year. Previously, I have a background in rescue diving, and that's part of the reason why I ended up joining. Just because I love and value community-driven mentality, and I'm one of those people who has a community-driven mentality, and I think that if you can't help, you should help. I'm an avid scuba diver, and so I got really good at diving, and so I took up rescue diving, and then when I moved down here, my kiddo got old enough, I was able to join search and rescue. And it's been absolutely wonderful. I think that being able to volunteer your time to help the people in your community, if they need help ever, is something important. And that's, you know, a mission that we should, you know, all strive for. If you can't do search and rescue, there's probably something else in the community that you can do to help your fellow friends.
Yeah, I want to talk more about it, but rescue diving, how did you get into that, and where did you do that at?
So actually, I got my regular, just so you know, open water certification in scuba. And then at one point I decided to do advanced open water just because I wanted to do some underwater photography and get a little bit further into it, to being a little bit more crazy. And so while I was doing that, I don't know, I just figured I wanted to like help a little bit more and find, you know, when you're down there, honestly, like it can be a little bit scary when you're 105 feet underwater. Yeah. And so I wanted to feel more confident. Like I mentioned, I have a kiddo. And so eventually I knew my kiddo was going to want to get scuba certified. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to know that when my kiddo's down, you know, 60 feet underwater with me, if something goes wrong with him, I'm able to handle that situation in a calm, collected manner and at least get him to the surface in a way that, you know, might be able to save his life. And I think that that's also important for other people that you dive with. I dive at least, you know, twice a year. And so being on the boat with random strangers, knowing that when we're down there, I'm, you know, probably going to be the person to help them up if something goes wrong, like that's a good thing. I feel confident with myself, I feel confident with my kiddo, and I feel confident with the people that I'm with. And I think that that's really important when you're doing something as unsafe and as challenging as scuba diving.
No kidding. Well, and you know, pulling people off a 14er, I would say, requires the same level of like trust in the people around you.
it requires, I trust my team members, like with literally with my life. Like they are probably some of the most dedicated people I've ever met. Just to be very frank, oddly, some of them do random things on the weekend to even help the team. Like we were having, they were doing some work with some pulleys, and I just, a really weird way to explain it was that somebody went home and bothered to measure the angle of a rope for like several different points wow. over the weekend just to figure out what the actual load was on it. And that was in their free time. And that's what I mean by like the most dedicated people yep. I've met. Instead of sitting down and watching, you know, football or TV or something, they bothered to go out and do science in their backyard just to make sure that we're all safe. And that's just making sure that the team's safe. That's not even talking about the people that were actually out there saving. And so honestly, the team in and of itself, part of the reason why I'm still there is because like the people there are so inspiring and they're so dedicated to just their community as a whole. And I think that that inspires me too.
No, it was hard to leave the team a few years ago when I was on it, because I was like, oh, I like working with these people so much. And, you know, there were a few people on the team who I would have trusted with my entire life. When you go up South Zapata Lake, or if you go up Como Basin with those people, there's a bond that I would say mostly goes unspoken, but it's very, very strong. It's very palpable. Are you finding kind of your niche in the team? Or are you kind of revolving around roles? Where are you kind of fitting in?
It kind of depends on the day, I think. if you can't tell, I'm kind of a tiny person. And so that makes it, you know, kind of an easy thing to toss me into a helicopter for training sometimes. Yep. Or if, you know, you need to put somebody in a litter and lower somebody next to the litter, you know, that's easy. Yep. I'm not very heavy. I think honestly, kind of part of what I do there is maybe just be a bit of a positive note. Nice, I think, you know, with search and rescue, especially, like it's a very serious situation that we're in most of the time. And so just having, you know, in my head, I just try to keep things, you know, let's just keep the camaraderie up. Let's make sure that we're all staying very clear and very connected. And like, I don't know, just keeping the energy up would be what I would say I do.
Nice. No, that's good. I think that's an important role. It really is. I think that especially when you're dealing with recoveries, there's really not a moment for lightheartedness, but there's always room for positivity. For people who are calm and collected, I think it's nice to have those anchors, those rocks, because it can be a tumultuous, dangerous time. It really can be. And so having somebody who's like, okay, you know, the strong support keystone is really important. Those are roles of the team that I think go way under noticed. So thank you. Thank you for your dedication to the team. I really appreciate it.
My ability to compartmentalize emotions.
Exactly. So you and I recently wrote a story on a training that you and I were part of earlier in August. Training with night vision goggles, identifying different light sources from a helicopter. What was that training like for you?
Oh, that training was absolutely epic. It was just so awesome. I think, honestly, one of the things that was just like the coolest was, I mean, like you got to see the lighter. Figuring out that literally carrying a lighter could save your life just blew my mind. So first, for everybody, you know, who's listening to now, like when you're up in a helicopter and you got night vision goggles on, like, you know, you're looking for, what we were doing was we were looking for a light source. So we were looking for the people who we were kind of searching for on the ground and seeing, like, they had different light sources, like a lighter, they had a camp stove. I think there was a glow stick. Yep. And so really what we were doing was we were just trying to identify where they were on the ground and kind of gauge the brightness of what it is that way they were using. And oh my goodness, just the lighter was absolutely insane.
Crazy.
It was like fireworks. And so, I don't know, I've definitely told my kiddo to carry a lighter with him everywhere from now on, and I'll definitely do the same. But it was absolutely wonderful.
Was that your first helicopter training?
No, it was not my first helicopter training. It was my first time actually up in the helicopter. Nice. However, we've done helicopter training before. We just, like, unfortunately never really had the time or capacity for me to go up. So that was the first time I've actually gone up in one, and that was just crazy.
Yeah, and at night with a pair of really high-tech night vision goggles, like, I was really blown away by how crystal clear the vision was. It was really crazy.
I thought I saw better with the goggles on than I did, like, just during the daytime, if I'm
big
honest,
time.
Just because, like, you could see the topography a lot better, and, like, you could see, like, not necessarily trails, but, like, deer trails, and just the difference in topography, you could see pretty well.
The contrast was really crazy, especially when you got up in the air and you were able to look at the valley. It was like, I've never seen the valley in such, like, crystal clear light. It was really, really cool.
No, I think also, you know, just to bother to mention, the amount of people on Lake Como Road was absolutely insane.
Wild the amount of people up there in early June. But I went camping last year right at the helipad, because my dad is the undersheriff, and so he's like, we're gonna camp at the helipad. I'm like, okay, cool. Until 2 o'clock in the morning, I mean, probably 120 cars in early October going up Lake Como Road. And there was a Porsche, like a fancy, really bougie kind of Porsche. And it's going up this road, and I'm following it, and it just keeps going up, keeps going up, keeps going up. And I'm like, man, they're not going to be able to get that car off. And then the next morning, just driving off, like nothing wrong. I was just blown away.
So lucky he didn't see a high rack. Oh, my goodness.
Man.
I would love to watch a video of somebody taking a Porsche around Jaws.
Oh, my God. If they could, I would watch it. I would watch it all day long.
That's hilarious.
So I understand you also have some upcoming programming you want to share with us. What do you got coming up?
It's rock climbing season. That's the best way I can put it. So we at the rec center, we start on Saturdays this week. Actually, we're going to have Pebbles, which is what we call our littles group, because they're little. So our ages 3 to 6, we're going to have rock climbing. We also start Cliffhangers. We have a parent meeting this Friday. Cliffhangers is our high school rock climbing team that we started last year. That is also part of the high school outdoor leadership and recreation team. So it's in partnership with Boys and Girls Club and Adams State Adventure Program. Last year was the first year that we had started. We went to about 6 competitions. They were in Colorado Springs. And honestly, it was a big logistical lift to start a whole high school rock climbing team. And this year we went harder. We're adding a middle school team.
Right on, nice.
Yeah, so it's about to get even crazier, but we're really excited for it. The Cliffhangers is not just related to Alamosa, though. It's valley-wide, and I think that that's important because it's part of, you know, Gin Wild Coalition. You know, it's making that outdoors equitable, and so we really want the whole valley to participate. And so really we have that starting this Friday with a parent meeting, and then we'll be starting practices on the 30th of September and then the 3rd for middle schoolers. But that'll be exciting for parents to look out for because, I mean, honestly, there is no other rock climbing team in the valley. Yep. It's just us.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. So really what that means for the city, though, which is exciting, is we finally have like a full ladder program. We literally, from kids all the way from 3 years old up until college, you can rock climb in Alamosa. And I think that that's really key. And that's something that we want to do in other areas too. We're trying to make that happen with mountain biking. Nice. That's really important to us, is getting kids on bikes, you know, on some balance bikes from a young age and learning that, and then all the way to adulthood. And then also with paddle boarding, you know, that's something that we wanted to do, is get kids involved in aquatics from a young age. And so not necessarily going to be competing in paddle boarding necessarily unless you're in a triathlon, but still to just have those pieces where you, from a, you know, little toddler, you know, kindergarten all the way to an adult, can enjoy the outdoor recreation piece. So when we're talking about biking, though, I want to bring up something that we're having this year that's going to be exciting. We're going to do our first ever Halloween bike parade.
Oh, right on. Yeah, nice.
It's going to be costume. And that actually came from you guys. The Outdoor Citizen did this really wonderful survey of cyclists in the valley. And one of the responses that we got consistently from that was that people wanted a mass bike ride. Yep. And so we heard what you guys said and we wanted to make it happen. And so that's what we're doing on Halloween. So if you have a bike and you want to wear a costume, even if you don't want to wear a costume, join us at the rec center. It's going to be from 2 to 4 on Halloween, starting at the rec center is where the parade's going to be. We're going to have a costume contest for kiddos and adults. The prizes are absolutely wonderful. You can win a master mechanic class with Alamosa Bike Coalition.
Nice.
Kiddos can win and earn a bike class, meaning that they get to build a bike and take it home themselves. So those are two pieces that we wanted to give to the community just as an equitable piece, but then, you know, just as fun costume prizes, I think is really what that piece is there. What makes it even better is when you're done with us and the bike parade, you can go to the ice rink from 4 to 8 and get to ice skate for free, or you can go across the road to the armory and get to do the trunk or treat with the police officers.
Damn.
And so we have a whole day of Halloween fun planned for the city.
Good time to be down at the rec center that day.
Oh man, starting it too. But you know, I also want people to, you know, if you don't want to ride a bike, maybe come out of your house and wave at all the people in costumes on their bikes, because I think that that's important too, just cheering on the folks who decided to get out in a costume that day.
Yeah, what's the parade route going to look like?
Oh man, so we're going to start at the rec center. We're still kind of teetering on it a little bit, but we're probably going to go head up Ross over to where Maine is. The Boys and Girls Club has that nice little hub area next to where the school district has that parking lot, and so we might have a nice little aid station there, so that way if anybody needs water, they can stop there next to the Caterpillar and get a nice little, you know, drink, and then head back down Main Street back towards the rec center down 17th.
Nice.
Primarily, we wanted to avoid going on highways just because we are going to have kiddos there, and that safety piece is really important. We also wanted to take some back roads just to make it a little bit slower, because, I mean, if you have a kiddo who can't ride a bike yet, that's okay. Yep. They can be on a scooter, and that's just as cool. So
no, I probably eliminates that competition in people where you're just like, here is this like nice moving train of bikes, you know, nobody's here to win. We're all just here to ride and enjoy the day.
No, it's supposed to be a day for you to get together with your community and just enjoy, you know, riding a bike together.
Well, I hope that it will make Alamosa realize just how many people ride their bikes around here, because that bike survey really opened my mind. I mean, I grew up here. I know people ride bikes, but I didn't realize how prevalent it was and how prolific bike riding was to people around here. It's very cool.
It's very important. I think that's also, you know, I don't know if you know this about the city, but we just applied for a grant with GoCo to get a new bike park at Cole Park along with a new ADA accessible playground.
Right,
and
yeah.
So part of our mission to, you know, change Cole Park and revitalize it is to actually include that bike piece because people love it so much. Our dirt bike pump, you know, track there right now is pretty degraded and it's kind of hard to maintain. And so giving people, you know, a better space to learn how to ride, I think is important. And that was, you know, kind of the mission behind that.
Well, thanks again, Shauna, for joining us. You got any final thoughts you want to share with us before we let you go today?
No, just get out and enjoy your 24 miles of trail and come see us if you have any questions.
Right on. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, some outdoor conditions, but first a quick word from our sponsors.
Are you looking for funding to launch a community project, program, or event in Monta Vista? The Lohr Foundation is here to help. Lohr supports projects that are designed and led by locals like you. The best part, there are no complicated applications, time-consuming reports, or grant cycle deadlines. All it takes to start a funding request is a simple conversation. So reach out to the Monta Vista Community Officer Yvette Atencio at lohrfoundation.org today and take the first steps towards turning your idea into a reality.
¿Estás buscando financiamiento para lanzar un proyecto, programa o evento comunitario en Montevista? La Fundación LOR, L-O-R, está aquí para ayudarte. LOR apoya proyectos que son diseñados y liderados por personas locales como tú. La mejor parte, no hay solicitudes complicadas, informes que consumen mucho tiempo, ni fechas límite de convocatorias. Todo lo que necesitas para iniciar una solicitud de financiamiento es una conversación sencilla. Así que, comunícate hoy mismo con la oficial comunitaria de Montevista, Yvette Atencio, en lordfoundation.org. LORFOUNDATION.ORG. Y da el primer paso para convertir tu idea en una realidad.
Welcome back. The close of summer has delivered some much-needed moisture here in September, and inch of rain has fallen so far this month to add a bit of recharge to the Rio Grande. Temperatures will stay in the 70s throughout the month. There is no hard freeze yet in the forecast. The warmth has meant an early arrival of the fall, with some forecasts putting peak color season starting on September 20th in higher elevations. Alamosa Citizen intern Bree Robles put together a pretty knockout list of places to see during peak fall colors in the coming weeks. You can check out that list on alamosacitizen.com. We're always looking for outdoor field correspondents. If you're out and about in the outdoors on your feet, on sticks, on two wheels or four, take some photos, take a video or two, and record a quick note about your outdoor adventure. Give us a little rundown of the conditions, your thoughts about the area, and where you're at. We're also fans of keeping Colorado wild, so even if you don't want to tell us where you are, send it to info@alamosacitizen.com. Now, the news. The Trump administration, through an executive order and secretary order, have established the U.S. Wildland Fire Service. According to a press release from the Department of Interior, the federal government says that fires are costing the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars annually, damaging infrastructure, disrupting agriculture, driving up food prices, and threatening lives and livelihoods. Quote, decades of insufficient forest management, such as fuel buildup, invasive species spread, and delayed treatments, have created conditions where wildfires burn hotter, faster, and more destructively. Unquote. Fire seasons are longer, fire intensity is increasing, and suppression and recovery costs are soaring. Beyond landscapes, the government said wildfires now pose risks to national security, public health, energy, and water supplies. The U.S. Wildland Fire Service will unify the Interior's fire bureaus and align operations with the Department of Agriculture through shared procurement, predictive services, research, and policy reforms. Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum said, quote, for too long, outdated and fragmented systems have slowed our ability to fight fires and protect lives. Under President Trump's leadership, we are cutting through the bureaucracy and building a unified, modern wildfire response system that works as fast and as fearlessly as the men and women on the front lines. By streamlining federal capabilities and strengthening our partnerships with the state, tribal, and local teams, we will deliver the common sense reforms needed to safeguard our communities, our lands, and our future, unquote. Trump signed Executive Order 14308, empowering common sense wildfire prevention and response on Monday, which pins a lot of blame on poor fire response on local emergency management agencies and local governments. Through the Interior, the administration hopes to elevate local responses and elevate technologies to better fight and evaluate wildfires. It's important to note the administration is wanting to reverse any regulations limiting the use of fire retardants on wildland fires, despite their reputation for being persistent sources of pollution. The U.S. Wildland Fire Service will be officially established by the first part of 2026. Colorado Parks and Wildlife statewide Backcountry Search and Rescue Program, or BSAR, distributed $2.25 million in funding to 36 counties this year to support local search and rescue teams who assist people during outdoor and backcountry emergencies. Colorado is home to around 50 search and rescue organizations, which are 100% volunteer-based and provide search and rescue services free of charge to individuals lost, injured, or stranded in the backcountry. While these organizations are county-based and coordinated through county sheriffs, CPW provides support and funding from the statewide level. The state agency sells the Colorado Outdoor Recreation Search and Rescue Card and a search and rescue fee of 25 cents with the sale of fishing and hunting licenses and OHV registrations. However, as the demand for outdoor recreation increases in Colorado, so does the need for search and rescue services, CPW said. To help bring in more BSAR funding for the state, CPW launched the Keep Colorado Wild Pass to residents in 2023. This pass allocates $2.5 million of annual sales to Colorado BSAR programs to fund rescue training, mental health programs, and team equipment. The intent for this funding is to be a semi-fixed source that flexibly accommodates team strategies for priority purchases over time. CPW BSAR manager Perry Boydston said, quote, "We're constantly amazed by the dedicated volunteer search and rescue professionals across Colorado who are ready to mobilize and help people in a time of need when they become stranded, lost, or injured in the backcountry. These types of outdoor rescues often require a specific type of training and gear, so it's really important for the state to provide our local teams with the resources they need to complete rescues without jeopardizing their own safety." A mother black bear chased and scratched a man walking his dogs in Boulder last week. The man was only superficially injured, CPW said. The agency said the bear charged the man because she had a newborn cub nearby. This is the time of year for increased bear sightings and interactions as they prepare for winter. Bears will search far and wide for food, so it's important to police trash and be vigilant while outdoors. Kilian Jornet, an ultra mountain runner from Spain, is currently on his way through the Sangre de Cristos. Jornet is working on a project where he will scale 67 14ers in Colorado, California, and Washington called States of Elevation. Not only is he hiking 14ers in long, technical connecting routes, he's riding his bike between trailheads and will ride his bike to California and Washington. With a support crew to aid him along the way, the 37-year-old could be on the trails for a little longer than a month. Just Tuesday morning, Jornet updated his Instagram recapping his route from Humboldt Peak to the Crestone Peaks, including Kit Carson and Challenger Point. He wrote, quote, "Conditions were very challenging during the first night. Very stormy, snowing a lot, very windy, so I decided to get back. Today, I did all the Crestone Traverse, which was actually very beautiful. It's the kind of terrain I like, very technical, scrambling all the way." And now a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The San Luis Valley Chapter of Trout Unlimited will be hosting their monthly meeting on Thursday, September 18th at 7 p.m. at Nino's Restaurant, located at 326 Main Street in Alamosa. Thursday's program will be a presentation and discussion around hydrology in the Rio Grande Basin and what that means for trout. Pat McDermott, a staff engineer for the Division of Water Resources, has spent the last 31 years in the San Luis Valley studying the Hydrology and Water Rights Administration. Pat is a local who tries to listen and learn and dispense accurate data and options, diving deep into the long history and immense amount of data developed over 130 years. Pat is joined by Kevin Terry, Trout Unlimited Southwest Program Director. Kevin has spent the last 12 years working with the water user community in the San Luis Valley to develop win-win programs that improve flows for fish and farms through multi-benefit strategies. As always, the meeting is open to the public. For more information, call 719-588-7678. Celebrate the completion of the Outdoor Classroom and Recreation Enhancement Commemoration at Labrador's Bridge, September 26, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Years in the making, the project to increase user-friendliness and educational opportunities at the historic site is fully realized. The Labrador's Bridge is the southernmost bridge in Colorado that spans the Rio Grande. A great place of significance, you can find the bridge on County Road G in Costilla County. The 5th Annual True Penitence Climbing Festival is October 3rd to 5th at Penitente Canyon. The annual climbing festival and competition is hosted by the SLV Climbers Alliance and put on every year when the sun hits the rocks at Penitente just right. We recently had Angela Lee and Wes O'Rourke, the co-founders of the San Luis Valley Climbers Alliance, on the Outdoor Citizen podcast. You can listen to that on alamosacitizen.com, where you can learn more about the event, the kinds of routes you're looking at, the kinds of competition, and what kind of cool stuff is happening that weekend. You can also find more information on event details, how to sign up, how to volunteer, and what routes the competition will take place on at slvclimb.org. I will be there taking photographs and interviewing climbers, so I hope to see you out there. San Luis Valley Ecosystem Council has a trifecta celebration planned for Saturday, November 8th. It's been 25 years since the passage of the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve Act, 25 years since the creation of a category of public lands called National Conservation Lands, and 25 years of council leadership by Christine Canale. Now that's a trifecta worth celebrating. The event on November 8th is from 4 to 8 p.m. at Dunes Valley Distillery in Mosca. Let the SOV Ecosystem Council know you're coming by registering at the link in the SOV Outdoor Report on alamosacitizen.com. And that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced and published by alamosacitizen.com and edited by me, Owen Woods. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear in a future episode, email info@alamosacitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. For now, I'm Owen Woods saying get outside and have some fun. See you next time.